Welcome to the Arab Spring, a history. Episode 15, A Very Likely Friendship. The creation of Israel was a game changer in the Middle East. A new power was added to the mix, and the legitimacy of the new Arab states was compromised. If they could not protect their fellow Arabs, just how competent were their rulers? Not very was the response of many. Gamal Abdel Nasser was the rising figure of the day. He distinguished himself in the conflict and had earned the respect of his fellow nationalist officers. In March 1949, a coup took place in Syria, which we will get to next week, but this would spark a series of coups across the Middle East. In Egypt, the group of nationalist officers would name themselves the Free Officers. They formed an executive committee, of which Nasser was elected president. They would begin denouncing the regime. This added to the tension already rife in Egypt. Egypt had been in a state of chaos, with parliamentary democracy breaking down. Assassinations and counter-assassinations were occurring with a depressing regularity. One group which had earned much respect for its efforts in the war was the Muslim Brotherhood. But this had been outlawed by the Prime Minister in November 1948. A month later, the Prime Minister was assassinated, and 2 months later, the Supreme Guide of the Brotherhood was also assassinated. The King's popularity was plummeting. Farouk had once been a young, handsome, and popular figure, but was now suffering with a glandular disorder, and had become a middle-aged disgrace to the nation. He divorced his popular wife, a poor move. Still desperate to hold on to power, he brought Nahas back as Prime Minister, as the Waft won a majority, who was still also desperate to hold on to power. Relationships were breaking down with the West. The world of the Cold War was taking shape, and the West desperately wanted to keep the Soviets out of the Middle East. Turkey had already joined forces with the West, and the same proposition was made to Egypt, but they were reluctant to take it. Considering all the trouble the West had brought them over the past 100 years, all the betrayals, the apparent desire to still dominate the region, frankly, the Soviets were considered less of a threat than the West. The view prevalent in the Middle East was a neutralist approach. British deals were rejected, and Farouk was declared King of Egypt and the Sudan, despite the British refusal to agree to this. This was all very popular with the Fellaheen, but the British were offended. Nahas tried cutting off supplies to the Suez Canal, and guerrilla attacks were encouraged. The Free Officers offered training, while Communists and Muslim Brothers gladly helped out. Meanwhile, in Britain, there was a change in government, as at least Labour fell from power to be replaced with Churchill's Conservatives and his Foreign Secretary, Anthony Eden. Churchill was stuck in a tough situation. He needed to maintain British control of the Suez, but they couldn't utilise this while the 80,000 troops there were focused on defending it. Just what were his options? Seemingly, the only option was to reoccupy Cairo, but this was a step too far, even for Churchill. The guerrilla attacks increased. The British came down hard, and in response on the 26th of January 1952, Black Saturday, the centre of Cairo was burned, destroying British and foreign-owned property. It is not known just who did this, but the Muslim Brothers, and the quasi-fascist Young Egypt were involved in the mob's leadership. Much damage was caused, as it took until evening for somebody to bring the city to order. This was very dangerous. Everybody knew that if British lives were threatened, the British would invade. As the king and government blamed each other, Nahas was dismissed, and five different governments were formed in the next 2 months. Egypt was crumbling. It was time for the free officers to make their move. They had planned to wait until 1954-1955, but were convinced they should speed things up. General Muhammad Naguib was brought in as president, as he was a popular figure. They waited secretly, and when the king moved to his summer palace in Alexandria, they struck. On the night of the 22nd to 23rd of July, 1952, they took Cairo, and the revolution was announced on the radio the next morning. They moved to take control of the king before the British could, and Farouk was allowed to abdicate and go into exile. The international community was quick to recognise the new regime, led by Naguib, though it would be some time before they realised it was the 34-year-old Nasser really calling the shots. The free officers, now run by a revolutionary command council, the RCC, had a clear idea of what they wanted to do. Rid Egypt of the powers of Britain, landlords, and the monarchy. But other than nationalism, there was no ideology as such, as existed with the communists and the Brotherhood. These were, though, not really threats. The only real threat was the WAFD, whose leading members were imprisoned. In January 1953, all political parties were dissolved, and Egypt was declared a republic in June 1943. Naguib noted, "The world's oldest monarchy became, for the time being, the world's youngest republic." He remained both president and prime minister, while Nasser remained deputy prime minister and minister of the interior. Having removed the monarchy, they worked on land reform. Rents were reduced, there was a land cap of 200 fedans, with excess land being redistributed, and 10% of the fellaheen benefiting. This received criticism from some revolutionaries, such as the communists, who derided it as Western-inspired. No doubt intended as an insult, but its comparatively moderate tone prevented the drops in production which revolutionary land distribution creates. With the major problems dealt with, they now turned against the communists and Muslim Brotherhood. As 1953 went on and entered 1954, Nasser played his games, manipulating the conservative Naguib until he became Prime Minister in April 1954. By October, Nasser was ready to repress the Brotherhood, when they tried to assassinate him. And with it, Nasser brought down Naguib, who was proved to have a connection to the Brotherhood. There was no formal accusation, but he was removed from office and placed under house arrest. Nasser was now firmly in control, where he would remain until his death in 1970. The first true Egyptian to rule Egypt in over 2,000 years. He had come from a poor family and believed, as many in the West had not, that Egypt was able to govern itself. A blow for the regime came early with the Sudan. Nasser had been delighted when pro-Egyptian parties had won the elections held by the British and Egyptians, which was good, though the Sudanese opted for independence, and this was declared on the 1st of July, 1956. The other important issue between Britain and Egypt was the Suez. Since 1945, when Egypt was the centre of Britain's Middle Eastern policy, things had changed. Britain and the West still wanted to dominate the region, but no longer had to do this through Egypt. Turkey had joined NATO and became the Western base, with the British moving their main base from the Suez to Cyprus. While the British had mostly moved to Cyprus, they did not want to give up the Suez and wanted to retain 7,000 troops there, while Nasser would only accept reactivation of the base should Turkey, or an Arab country, be the victim of an outside attack. Nasser kept pressure up on the British by allowing guerrilla attacks on the Suez, and in July 1954, an agreement was made. British soldiers would leave the base, while maintaining it on a 7-year lease, and civilians being allowed to stay there if they were on contract with British firms. The last soldier left in March 1956. While Nasser spoke of a new era of friendly relations with Britain, the relationship was deteriorating. Britain received a new Prime Minister in 1955 in the figure of Anthony Eden, who was not particularly fond of Nasser. The British still believed Egypt to be incapable of governing itself, while Nasser was excited about the role Egypt could play in an era of global politics. This would come to a head with the Baghdad Pact. Originally an idea of the United States, it was planned to unite the Arab nations with Western ones in an anti-Soviet alliance. The US dropped it once it realised the biggest concern of the Arabs was Israel, not the USSR, but Britain persisted, still eager to maintain its Middle Eastern position. In 1955, Iraq, Turkey and Iran signed the deal with Britain. This was a disaster for Nasser. Egypt and Iraq were the only stable powers not dominated by others in the region. Nasser was a neutralist, while the leader of Iraq, Nuri al-Said, was pro-Western. Nasser did not want Iraq to side with the West. While he couldn't stop them, he was able to prevent Jordan from joining. His rhetoric turned Nasser into a very popular figure with the Arabs, which, due to its anti-Western nature, created many worries for the West. This led to the creation of a powerful force which would have a huge effect on the 20th century. Perhaps the worst misreading of the second half of the 20th century is that the world divided into two forces, behind either the United States or the Soviet Union, in a battle of ideology known as the Cold War. The Cold War did involve much of the world, but certainly not all of it. Many countries wanted no part of the battle between the United States and the Soviets. This was not their fight. The games of Europe had no interest to much of the world. As the 1950s got underway, a group of nations who felt this way began to talk, and the non-aligned movement began. Egypt, India, Indonesia, Ghana, and Yugoslavia were all significant states, and all wanted no part of the Cold War. There were not only two choices, there was a third way. This is the origin of the term, the Third World. Due to the poor nature of many of the countries, it has become custom to refer to poor countries as Third World countries. Though non-aligned countries include Switzerland, which certainly is not a poor country. Nasser of Egypt, Nehru of India, and Tito of Yugoslavia began the idea in 1955, and along with Ghana and Indonesia, formed the Non-Aligned Movement in 1961, which currently has 120 members. It was a big boost for Nasser to be considered in the same breath as Nehru, to be treated as an equal by Chinese Premier Chu Enlai. Nasser had, in short, become the leader of the Arab world. This was the view of the Arabs, non-alignment, as not wanting to get caught up in the Cold War by openly siding with either the West or the Soviets. Western views differed country to country. While Britain was still trying to maintain its power in the region, the US was less inclined to dominate it. They wanted to keep the Soviets out, using Turkey and Iran as useful bases, and were the backer of Israel. The Soviets also had a different view of the region. The old Christian Russia had regarded the Islamic states as their enemies. The many wars against the Ottomans are evidence enough for this. They wanted to push away south to a warm water port. These aims changed following the Bolshevik Revolution. While renouncing imperialism, Islam was still viewed with hostility. It was seen as backwards and counter-revolutionary. The Soviets tried provoking revolutions to overthrow the old imperial powers. They had backed Ataturk in Turkey, for instance, but this was Lenin's policy. Stalin, when he came to power in the mid-1920s, was not in favour of supporting bourgeoisie nationalism. It had not worked in Turkey. Ataturk gladly accepted the help of the Soviets, but detested communism. Lenin was okay with this, believing that nationalism would remove imperialism, which would eventually lead to communism. Stalin's priority was to support local communists. This was tried in Iran through the Tudeh Party, but only cemented anti-Russian feeling and failed completely. By the time of the Second World War, the Soviets had barely made a dent in the Middle East. There was the Azerbaijan incident, following the occupation of northern Iran, but this too proved a failure. Things could not be going worse for the Soviets, when they were blockaded by the Baghdad Pact in 1955. Just how were they to gain influence in the region? When Stalin died in 1953, the policy of supporting native communist groups died with him. The Soviets returned to Lenin's policy of supporting nationalist movements against the West. Egypt and Nasser were becoming increasingly unpopular with the West. Israel was an issue which caused much passion among the people, but which Nasser was trying to avoid. There had been a move towards peace, but attacks by Palestinian Fedayeen upon Israel prevented this. The Fedayeen were a group of guerrilla fighters, considered by some to be terrorists, by others to be freedom fighters, who had been based in Jordan for years, but moved to Egypt in 1954. The attacks provoked a response from Israel, who raided the Egyptian headquarters in Gaza. This, in turn, provoked Nasser to launch more Fedayeen assaults deep into Israel, causing global condemnation of the Egyptian regime. Egypt was not powerful enough to face Israel, and so needed a friend who could provide weapons in amounts the West was not prepared to do. The West had turned against Egypt. France believed Egypt had provoked a rebellion in Algeria, which was not correct. But nevertheless, Egypt needed a new friend who wasn't a Western power, and the Soviets needed a nationalist government in the Middle East who resented the West. That a Soviet-Egyptian friendship was born should surprise none of you. If you've enjoyed today's episode, you can find us online, thehistoryofpodcast.com. Nominations for the 2013 Podcast Awards are now open. If you'd like to go over there, podcastawards.com, that again is podcastawards.com, and nominate The Arab Spring, A History, for Best Education, that would be very nice of you. The next episode will be in 3 weeks, due to a journey down to Silverstone, so I shall see you then, when we will follow what happened as a result of Soviet-Egyptian friendship, namely, Egypt's desire to construct a dam at Aswan, and the crisis this would produce at Suez. Allah.